give me a heads up 5 minutes before the end, and then another, then a minute before.
Okay,
and now I have my pictures here. Just take it.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater. Really good to be at this meeting. There was a time when this was a regular meeting for me, and I now go to another meeting at this time. So it's unusual for me to be here, but I look around and I see a lot of friendly faces that I recognize. So it's really comfortable being here. So overeating story starts somewhere around age 4 or 5. By the time I'm 7, I think there's a picture of me when I'm 7 in there. I'm already chubby by that time, and I continue to gain weight. My top weight was, top measured weight was 312. And when I came to the program, when I started my compulsive overeating career, let me start that. That was when I was 4 or 5 years old, and my mom was taking a lot of heat from her sisters. And why do you let him eat so much? Why do you let him get so fat? And so she was under pressure to do something about it. And so she tried to restrict my eating and manage my weight, and God bless her, but it was a losing battle. I became a secret eater because of it. I had to have the food that was necessary for me for some, whatever the reason was, but I was a compulsive overeater from a very early age. And one of the things that I would do when as a secret eater, she was a stay-at-home mom. So if I came home and she wasn't there, and I was alone in the house, that what I would do is I'd head for the refrigerator, and I could see out the driveway. So if she came home, I'd know she was there and have a little bit of a warning. And I would put 4 or 5 pieces of bread. I would put my bologna or cheese or whatever. And then I would put the mustard or the mayonnaise. And then I would do lines of sandwiches and do 5 or 6. And then if she didn't come home by the time I ate them, I put everything away in case she did come home. So I have everything ready to go. All I have to do is grab my sandwiches and run. And but anyway, if she didn't come home, I'd do it again. I'd do another line of sandwiches. And one of the things that in my plan of eating is that I don't make sandwiches for myself. Even today, I haven't made one in 38 years. But I've made dozens of them for my kids. It's just something that I choose to do. That I was given the gift of being able not to have to do those kinds of things. By the time I go to college as one of the heavier kids as usual, and then I got married right after my graduation. And I remember my weight then, and this was me trying to get in the best shape I could for my wedding. So the best I could do was 235 pounds at that time. And then as I started out in my work career, and my dad started a business that was somewhat successful, and so I went into that business, and that was expected of the oldest. And so then I came to a place where I kept gaining weight, and there was a program that was a study that was just starting out, and they were it was at the school that I had graduated from, and it was for middle-aged men. And they were going to put half of us on a government-sponsored diet and exercise program. The other half, they're going to just let them do whatever, and then we're going to see who lived the longest, I guess. And so I went through the screening, hoping to get on that the team that got the government-sponsored diet and exercise program. And as I went through the process, the guy that was the doctor that was in charge of the study called me into his office and said I was not a candidate for their study. And I said, why not? And he said, because you're going to be dead by the time you're 50. And I was 39 at the time, so it was pretty easy to do the math. And that was a shock to me. I had people tell me, oh, well, yeah, you're going to die young and all this kind of stuff because you're overweight. And I just had this vision of someday in the very distant future, I just kind of went over dead. And I found out since then that that's not the way the death from this disease works. It's not a pretty thing. And anyway, so I became more willing, I guess, and I ran across a guy that had lost a lot of weight that I knew from business, and he told me that he did it by going to the OptiFast program over at UCLA. So I said, oh, I'm going over there. And so I went over there, and I lost 156 pounds in 9 months, and I never felt more powerful over this disease. And my thinking was, I finally found the answer. And I'm never going to let myself gain this weight back again. And so I was at a goal weight for the first time ever, probably. And I was, my plans were to get I got the new wardrobe, and my life is now going to take off. I got lost in weight, and I'm going to live a life of being thin. And guess what? That life of being thin lasted probably only 2 weeks. And then I started having trouble. And actually, I started having trouble as soon as they reintroduced regular food into the diet program that they had for us. And once that happened, I started gaining weight. And I came to a place of where I was under some real stress at work. And I made this conscious decision. Got too much stuff on my plate. I just can't mess with this eating thing. I'm going to just not worry about that, and I'm going to worry about my business concerns. That was my conscious thinking. The unconscious thing that was going on is actually compulsive overeater, and I didn't know it yet. I knew I was fat, but I didn't know I was a compulsive overeater. And so I gained all that weight back in a relatively short period of time. And so then I, what am I going to do? Well, it's the only thing that ever worked for me. And I put worked in parentheses. And so I went back to OptiFast, and I lost it a second time. So we're talking about a period of maybe 5 or 6 years. And so then I lost it and gained it back again. And so the third time I go back to restart, and that's going to be 1987, 86, somewhere around there. And I go in, and I'm losing weight, and the disease starts kicking in. It gives me this idea, this great idea, and say, oh, wow, you're not eating any regular meals. You're just drinking this stuff for your nutrition. And you could probably have one meal a week and nobody would ever know. I'll try it. And so I'm in Westwood Village. They have all these little restaurants in the sidewalk. So after I did my weigh-in and all that stuff with OptiFast, I'd go to Westwood Village and I'd pick a nice little place and I'd have a meal, have a breakfast. And that worked. It's in Dallas. I'm still losing weight. And then I got this other idea, really good idea. And this one was, well, since that's working so well, why don't you try a Sunday brunch? And As you guys know, that for normies, Sunday brunches are all you can eat. But for people like us, it's all you can possibly eat. And that was, and I couldn't hide it. And they warned me, and I couldn't stop. And couldn't stop. And so they kicked me out of that program. And that got me to one of the measures I had not tried, which was psychotherapy. So I went to a therapist, and it was really, it turned out to be a really good experience for me because I learned a lot of stuff about myself. But I didn't learn a compulsive overeater, and I did not learn how to do anything about it. And this poor guy, he was just, he didn't know what hit him when I came in there because he had all of these interventions that made a lot of sense to him, but they didn't, that, and they made sense to me on an intellectual level, but I couldn't do it. He said, what I want you to do is put a tablet by your refrigerator when you, before you start a binge, I want you to write down what you're feeling. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And once I got here and got abstinent, I knew why I couldn't do it is because the food scrubs all my feelings. I don't have to worry about what the feeling was. All I had to do is get the food, and it took care of it. And so I guess it was probably another 6 or 7 months that had gone by. I'm gaining weight, and first wife, my ex-wife, was an alcoholic, and she was in recovery. She was in a 30-day program for recovery at St. Jude's. And so I would stop and by there and visit after work every day, and I would be there for dinner. And they would then, so they didn't have an eating disorder unit, but they knew one when they saw one, and they told her to tell me about OA. And that's how I found out about OA. And so I came to my first meeting, and I think Georgia was at that first meeting. It was a Tuesday night meeting over on Covina Boulevard, and I remember getting to the parking lot and just being kind of hesitant to walk through that door. And as I'm standing there, and Nora pulled up. Nora was a member of OA. She passed away now, but she was a saint to me. And anyway, so she said, "Are you looking for a meeting?" And I said, "Yeah." And so she took me in, and she introduced me to the people that were running the meeting and that. And so it was a very comfortable introduction. And so I really liked what I heard. And I think the fellowship was what got me back to my second meeting, to be honest with you, because it sure wasn't the God stuff. I didn't like that. And I knew that that was going to be tough, but I said, well, I can fake it. I've faked it before. But when they said that that a lot of the people were talking about they didn't eat white flour and sugar, and my God, I could never do that. And so I, but I'm gonna come back to another meeting. It was going to be the newcomer meeting that they had at Monday night at the library. And but before that happened, that was a Thursday night meeting. And before that happened was the it was Saturday morning. So what happened at the Thursday night meeting when I went back was the leader of the meeting. This was a setup. God set it up. The meeting usually met in a classroom in the basement of the Covina Andrew Community Hospital. So that night, somebody else had taken over the basement room, the classroom, and the only place they had for us was the boardroom, the doctor's boardroom, this huge oval table with all these real comfortable chairs sitting around it. So that's the setting that I'm walking into. And so the guy says, he tells his story, and he said, "So let's go around the room and everybody tell one of their miracle stories." And so as people are going around, I'm not buying it. And it comes to my turn. And I don't think those are miracles. I think they're coincidences. And there was one lady there. Gosh, what was her name? The Reverend Red-haired lady, Rusty.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so she says, "Why don't you just keep coming back and you'll see your own miracle?" And so I was, that the 5 minutes?
Yeah, you've got 5 minutes left.
Okay. So that was that was me going to into the Saturday morning. My ex-wife has been released from the AA thing that she's, and she, by the way, she died sober after 30 some odd years of sobriety. She was one of the few people that came out of that, let's say, class that maintained her sobriety for the rest of her life. Anyway, so she's had been told that if she got cravings, that chocolate was a good thing to stave the cravings. Even says that in a big book. And so she made some chocolate chip cookies. And she said, "Do you want some of these right out of the oven?" And I said, "No, I don't need those anymore." And the truth is, I didn't know I didn't need them anymore. That was something that had just, all I could say, it had to be a gift from God. There was, I had hired the best people I could to do something about my weight and my food, and they failed. And I'd gone to every doctor that seemingly had a history of success with our type, and the truth was they didn't have that. And so I had tried the best people. I'd spent a lot of money on this disease. I had tried diets, shots, and what else? Optifast, and none of it worked. So when I'm looking at myself having this obsession to eat food, and I didn't care what happened to those cookies, I realized, I knew I had to be God. There was no other possible answer. And I've had atheist people try to tell me that I just discovered this this hidden wellspring in my subconscious or whatever, and I just don't go for crap because I know that it was God that did it, and that changed everything and changed my life. Then once I took a third step, I had a mentor, Peter Smith, and who was a wonderful guy, and he would meet with me every other week at 12 noon at his office, and I didn't realize till later he was giving up his ministry for me. And he introduced me to the Big Book and a lot of the things that thinking that really influenced me in the early days and even continued to this day. And that was the beginning. And so, it says in the Big Book, a price has to be paid. And the price was one that was working strips. And so I had a sponsor, and she said, "We're going to work with steps according to the Big Book." And her logic was, because we know that worked. And the other ones might work, but we know 100% that the Big Book works. So we did it according to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at that time, we didn't have our 12 and 12, OA 12 and 12 hadn't been published yet. And so we and that was and that was the beginning. Today's reading kind of alludes to codependency in a way. And one of the things that God took me to along the way was Codependence Anonymous. And I walked into that first meeting. They were brand new. They had just been formed. And this was a bunch of alcoholics. 1 minute, okay. they had double digit recovery, all 10 years or more recovery. And they were there, and on the table they had the reading that they were going by, and that was Bill Wilson's emotional sobriety reading from Ray Fine, and that was the basis of the meeting. And and so I got to work the steps in that program, and once I did that, then I was set up by my higher power to change careers. He found a buyer for our business that I didn't find it, but God found it. And then I went through the process of becoming a marriage and family therapist, and I got licensed, and that was an 8-year process, but I got licensed, and I just recently retired after 20 years having an office here in Covina. So, and that was and that was the story of my life, is that and Peter had told me this, that when once you take the third step, he says, hang on to your shorts, because you're in for a hell of a ride. And that's the truth, that once I took that third step, there was no stopping my higher power, and he changed everything for me. And I'm really happy to be here today. And I'm I thank God, you know, for a guy that was supposed to die when he was 50, I turned 86 or 85 now, and I'll turn 86 in just a couple of months. And they and those extra years have been the greatest gift of all. And that big part of that is Overeaters Anonymous. It changed my whole outlook on life, and changed that. Changed my life, period. So, and anyway, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Bill.